Aya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Shrestham Manamapi Shachiputra Matra Surupam Rupam Tas Yagra Jamurupuring Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Giribaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yatsya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tamnatosmi Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Atapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. After a weekend of nectar, hearing about the pastimes of Srila Prabhupada, now it's back to this philosophy, which actually the major part of Srila Prabhupada's pastimes was speaking philosophy, literally day and night. So for those who didn't have personal association with Srila Prabhupada, they can have by reading his books. Srila Prabhupada said, if you want to know me, read my books. Everything that I wanted to say is in my books. This is philosophy. Of course, we use the word philosophy in a different way to the way it's normally used in the English language. It's considered a topic for people who haven't got anything better to do, with no real meaning in the world. Philosophers will discuss, is there meaning, isn't there meaning, and most people just get on with the meaning of their life, which is ahara nidra bhai maitun, especially maitun, eating, sleeping, defending, fearing, and mating. But this delineation of the reality of the material world is the kind of stuff that even classical philosophy, as it's understood in the Western sense, is made of. What is the nature of reality? This is called ontology. What is real? What is reality? What is real? We are all sitting here together. This is real. Is it really real, or am I just dreaming, or is it just all a big illusion? This is the kind of thing that they like to discuss among themselves. Oh, it's a good idea to turn that on. Yeah. Okay. And if it is like this, why is it like this? Is there anything real? If it's real, why is it real in the way we perceive it? Maybe there is reality, but it's not what we perceive. And so many questions come out of it. And then we have the whole theism versus atheism discussion. That, all right, the world's here, but how did it get here? Must be God. No need of any God. We have now come to a stage of scientific understanding by which I'm here paraphrasing Sri Richard Dawkins, Mahashoy, who says that there's no need. God is just something that primitive people considered. The God of the gaps, he calls it. When you can't explain something, you just say, well, God did it. It's inconceivable. God did it. So he says that now we don't need God to explain anything. We know there was a big bang and everything fell into place just the way it is now. And what's the proof? Well, the proof is that we're here now. So it must have happened like that. It's called, simplistically, the anthropic principle. The proof that there was a big bang and we're all here now and all these the incredible unlikeliness, well, nevertheless, we are here. So it may be unlikely, but we are here. So we don't need any God. It's all explained by science. One problem is that, as is stated here, that one problem with this theory, one of the problems with the theory, it's a problem-producing theory, as they will find out. They will have to encounter many problems. They're already encountering many problems, but they will have to encounter more life after life. One problem with this theory is that they say God are the gaps, but there'll always be gaps because they'll never understand everything, as is stated here. They can't understand. They think they got it all worked out, and they keep on looking at the universe and this and that, and they find it's, well, there's something which doesn't quite fit this theory, and so you try to invent something, just like inventing that most of the universe is made of dark matter. We didn't see it, it's dark, but it must be there. Otherwise, how would all the other laws that we have work? And they go on and go on, and then they come up with a new theory altogether, and then they go along with that for some time, and then they find there's problems in that, and then they come up with another theory, and it goes on and on and on and on, and it will never stop, because that is the nature of Maya, that we think that we can understand everything about her, but as Srila Prabhupada points out, we can't even understand what's going on in our own bodies, which is a little universe. What to speak of the whole universe? So that this universe is very complex, different materialists, they take different approaches to this. One is that, well, we don't understand everything, but we're working on it. The famous post-dated blank check. We're working on it. We don't know. To quote again, Richard Dawkins, what is consciousness? Well, we don't know. It's a great mystery. But we're working on it. With the assumption that, well, it must be something material. It can't be anything. It can't be anything spiritual, because science means to show that there's nothing. Belief in something spiritual is just something primitive. People who weren't evolved in much sufficiently, they believe in anything, in metaphysics, anything, that there's anything spiritual. And many materialists, they're not even bothered. Whether there's God, whether there's not God, trying to understand all this, too complicated. Let others discuss this, that you all discuss. It's too complex to understand. Let's just get on with life and do what we have to do. That means working, if you can get a job, and if earning some money. Or if you can't earn some money, then you can, I'm not recommending, but you could sell some dope or something like this. And eat, sleep, drink, be merry and enjoy, for tomorrow we shall all be dead. This idea. So most materialists, they don't, people who are extremely materialistic, they're so materialistic that they don't even bother to even think of justifying it, and they just get on with it. Why should we bother discussing all these things? You only live once, so just enjoy it. Complexity, as Srila Prabhupada points out in this purport, the complexity of the material world is perplexing. The mathematics that underlies the laws of this universe, the mathematical harmony and symmetry, how can it be like that? Why should it be like that? Everything is complex. The mathematical complexity, psychological complexity. Sometimes we talk of simple people. But their simplicity means that they're less complex than others. And often the people we think are very simple, they're actually very complex. Everyone's a very complex person. What to speak of humans, Even animals have their personalities, and there seems to be an upcoming field of study of dog psychology and human-dog interrelations. Subject of study. So everything is very complex. Even to study history, you might think, well, that's set in stone, so it's all, it shouldn't be very complex. But then you'll find with the same data that different interpreters of various events in history, they come up with different theories of what and how it happened, just like I recently came across some article which said that actually Hitler wasn't so much causal in the Second World War as we presume him to be. It would have had to have happened anyway because of other socio-political, economic especially, factors. So there are different theories. It's all quite complex. Everything's complex. This term food chain, it's a common word among ecologically minded people. But if we examine the food chain, how jivo jivasya jivanam, one living being is food for another, and then that one is food for another, and then that one is food for another, and on and on and on. It's extremely complex how everything works, and as has been noted by ecologists and others, that we may invent pesticides that kills the pests, but the pests, as we call them, there's no word in Sanskrit for pest, by the way, in the sense of creatures that come and eat your corn while it's in the field. The pests also have some function to play, and the predators on the pests, such as the birds, they also have a function to play, other functions to play in the great complex chain of nature. So by upsetting this balance, it, as usual, causes more problems than it solves. And then the scientists do some more research and make some solution to the problem that they caused and get a Nobel Prize for doing so. And after some time, it's found out that the solution creates another set of problems, and then someone else works on solving them, and he gets a Nobel Prize, and life goes on. In the meantime, the whole ecological balance is all upset, and here we are today in the world in the year of the Lord 2014, discovering that everything is very more complex than we thought we could understand. Scientists also were studying areas of complexity. A scientist may take some very small area of a subject and work on it all his life and never come to any conclusion. So that one scientist doesn't have a clue what another scientist is doing. At the same time, there's so much interdisciplinary science with consciousness studies goes across neurology, psychology, sociology, scientists are also trying to find a unified theory of everything. Some equations that will explain everything. We can provide it. It's not an equation. But they won't accept it. The answer is, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matas sarvam pravartate. Krishna says, everything comes from me. But they won't accept this. Because just as, iti matva bhajante maang buddha bhava samanvitaha, just as very intelligent and devotional people understand this and therefore worship Krishna, there are others who are just as determined never to find Krishna. They're described, Matiena Krishna Paratasvato Vamito Bibadyeta Grihavratanam. Adanta gobhir vishatang vishatang tamisram punaf punas charvita charvananam. Their real philosophy is enjoying the senses, which is not no philosophy at all, because even the horse and the pig does it. And pig is not a philosophical creature. Although maybe more philosophical than some humans. So the humans who are determined not to be Krishna conscious, then by that very fact alone, ipso facto, they won't be Krishna conscious. Even they will prefer to go to hell, because at least in hell there's some opportunity for sense enjoyment. As the story is given in the Bhagavatam of a man who is running away from a tiger, and he's running, and he doesn't notice that ahead there's a cliff, and he falls off. And he's just he falls down, and there's a tree at the edge of the cliff with the roots growing out on the cliff, and he grabs a root, so he's holding on. He looks up, and the tiger's looking down at him. So he looks down, how far is it? It's a long way. Shall he risk dropping? Well, there's also some vipers down there waiting to bite him. He looks up a little closer and he sees a rat is gnawing on the root. Meantime, there's a beehive in the tree above, and every minute or so a drop of honey drops down right on his tongue, and he thinks, wonderful! This honey is so wonderful and so sweet. Just ignoring all the unavoidable danger all around him, he's thinking, life is wonderful. So without doing anything, I'm just getting this honey. So this is the attitude of the Mahamudha, the great fool, who is enjoying in the midst of all suffering and is... He thinks this is very good. Let me enjoy my senses. The fact that this world is dukhalayama shashvatam, everything here is miserable and temporary. He doesn't take cognizance of that. He thinks that, either I have to face the tiger, or get my bones broken by falling down, or if I survive falling, the vipers are there to bite me. But anyway, in the meantime, look on the bright side. The honey's dripping down. Of course, the bees could attack him at any time also. That he doesn't consider. So, to be a materialist is extremely foolish. To not ascribe this material complexity to a higher cause is very foolish. Mayavadis, they also look for like out-and-out atheists, they also look for a simple explanation of all the complexity that that is perceived. But they also have the same disease of not wanting to recognize that this power that we perceive is going on under the direction of the powerful, mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Srila Prabhupada quotes that here. It is all going on under Krishna's supervision, this material world. They don't want to recognize that. They may do superficially. Within Shankaracharya's mayavad is recognition or superficial recognition of Ishvara, which means the supreme controller. But they think that Ishvara is also a manifestation of Maya. So they ultimately come to know God. If you say to a classic follower of Shankara that, well, you're atheist, you don't believe in God, they'll protest. No, we believe in God and we worship Krishna and Shiva and Durga and Ganesh and Surya. And we believe, but their belief in God, it's... it's denying him at the same time. Srila Prabhupada would sometimes quote a Bengali saying, Tomar bhalobasha musulmaner murgi posha. There are no Bengalis here. They'd laugh if they heard it. It means that your love, it's like a Muslim's rearing a chicken. He's rearing a chicken very nicely, and then one day, you can supply the next line. Of course, nowadays, Hindus, as much as Muslims in Bengal, are also looking after chickens. So the Mayavadis are also ultimately atheists. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said they're worse than even straightforward atheists, such as Buddhists, Vednamani Abodhoelo Nastik, because they don't recognize the Vedas. The Buddhists are called Gnostic, atheists. But Veda Shroy Nastik Kyavad Buddha Kayadik. But worse than Buddhism, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, is to propagate the same philosophy as Buddhism, but to pretend that you're doing it in the name of the Vedas. Because the Vedas is meant for revealing Krishna, Vedaisya Sarvaraham Eva Vedyah. So they're also atheists. And although Mayavadis and Buddhists recognize that this world is full of suffering, they don't want to take the real solution, the material complexity. What is the Buddhist solution to that? What is the nature of reality? Well, they say, you can't, according to Buddhism, or it's difficult to say according to Buddhism because there are so many different Buddhisms or interpretations, but common enough among them is to say that, that we cannot say that this world exists. We also can't say that it doesn't exist. And then what? And then nothing more to say about that. And what are you supposed to think? You're not supposed to think. That's it. All finished, all over. So as Vaishnavas, we actually can explain everything. It's very easy to explain. Everything means we're not going to look in the microscope and the telescope and try and explain every detail of the material creation. As Srila Prabhupada explains in this purport, it's not possible for us to understand all the details. And why bother anyway? We may think, previously, people didn't have as much scientific knowledge as we have today, but how much do you need, actually? Just like to drink milk, you have a cow, feed it grass, and you milk it. And there are a few other things to know. There's animal husbandry and veterinarianism, and that people know. It's not that you have to get a research grant from the government to find out how to look after cows. So that's all you need to know. You don't have to know how the grass is being processed in the stomach of the cow and then invent some hormones so that the cow's udders become so big she can't even walk properly, so that you get more milk, and then you give it to your children so they can grow nicely, and with all those female hormones, the girls at 7 years old hit puberty, and there you go, solving one problem, making more problems. No need of all this detailed knowledge. As Krishna says, after explaining in the 10th chapter of Gita, that anything you see, kimba kukta name prabhu, what is the need to explain all these different things? Just understand it all comes from Krishna. Not that Vedic society in previous times was lacking scientific knowledge. It's difficult to imagine how, prior to the decimal system, any kind of engineering was done in the Western world. How can you work mathematics with Roman numerals? It was one of the greatest breakthroughs in science was the Arabs having brought from India the decimal system with a zero, and then you can work with it. You can do mathematics. You can't do mathematics with Roman numerals. So that, for instance, was an advanced geometry, cosmology. If we want to know what time the moon will rise today in Los Angeles, we can consult tables. Well, we can just go on the internet, I guess, and it's calculated by observation of the movements of the planets and stars. We can also do so utilizing ancient Vedic system of astronomy. Of course, we'd have to probably update the tables that are used, because the tables that are used for calculating these things, they have to be just by the, because not everything moves together in tandem, therefore the tables have to be, the astronomical constants are not so constant, so they have to be updated every so often. Anyway, the point is that there is tremendous knowledge, and actually not in just what we call the Vedic civilization as known in India, but as more and more people are becoming aware of, there was advanced knowledge of mathematics and architecture, engineering, and many other subjects all over the world in the ancient world. Despite the tremendous evidence for this, the orthodox academia don't want to accept it, which just shows how biased and unscientific they are. Anyway, the whole point is summarized, that everything's coming from Krishna. And in this way, a simple theist, even without highly advanced scientific knowledge or philosophical knowledge, actually becomes more advanced in knowledge in the fact that he's more right than so many sophisticated atheists, scientists, Mayavadis, because you may be an expert in so many mathematical calculations, but if your if at the end of it, after doing a massive algebra calculus, you come to the conclusion that 1 equals 0, then you're less correct. Actually, you're incorrect. Whereas someone who only knows how to add 1 plus 1 equals 2. If you say 1 plus 1 equals 0, in fact, that's what they all, they say 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 up to infinity, and it all equals 0. That's materialism. But those, if you get the right answer, then even if you can't explain the complexity, then you're right. And with that right knowledge, you can get benefit. The complex scientific knowledge is being pursued so we can get benefit. We can make more gadgets and gizmos and all kinds of things. But those who know that the purpose of life is to get free from this suffering of birth and death, they can take advantage of that most important knowledge. Otherwise, what's the use? In a place of misery, we're making more gizmos to divert our attention from the reality that this existence is temporary. We have to get free from this. Is human life is an opportunity to get free from birth and death. But instead, people live in the world of computer games, completely absorbed in total meaninglessness. The Mayavadis and Buddhists, they were, and among materialists, skeptics, they'll all agree that this world is temporary and miserable. The Vaishnavas have the solution how to come out of that. in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna states, he gives the summary of all the massive libraries of knowledge, of history, the whole history of the world, and the whole future of the world, and the whole present of the world is described by Krishna in two words, Dukale Amashashvatam. That's all we really need to know about this world. It's miserable and temporary. And we may, for the sake of demonstrating it to the mudhas, we may learn some things about this world, some of the details, just to demonstrate how miserable and fruitless, futile it is, and especially in this Kali Yuga, hypocrisy is normal. Nowadays we would be surprised if a politician especially wasn't hypocritical. It would be unusual. It's very difficult to be a politician nowadays especially without being hypocritical. You can't get in that crowd. You can't operate in the political sphere unless you're corrupt and shameless. You can brazenly tell lies. You just can't, you won't fit in, you won't be allowed to fit into that world. So we can cultivate some knowledge of this, as is stated in Ishopanishad. We should cultivate knowledge of vidya and avidya, knowledge and ignorance side by side. But this fact, as we feel ourselves pulled toward Maya, as we're trying to come out of the clutches of Maya, and she's always trying to pull us back. The prakshepatmika vritti. Generally, she's avaranatmika. She's covering. And when someone tries to get out, kicks him back. So as Maya is kicking back, we can remember, dukale amashashvatam. This world is miserable. I don't belong here. Everything here is temporary. Let me take shelter of Krishna. So we have here in this one purport, philosophical expose of the material world and what we should do to get out of it, and getting back to the Prabhupada memories, all the gratefulness we feel, all the charm that we feel of Srila Prabhupada, it's all condensed into his mission to serve Krishna and the parampara by conveying this to us, what we need to know. We need to know. We don't belong here in this world. Come to Krishna. All Srila Prabhupada's endeavor was to communicate this to us. Hare Krishna. Any question or comment, please? Is there a... Yeah. Is there another mic? You have a loud voice. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Extend their lives and overcome their
Oh, they can go for that treatment. They sit in the dark for 1 month.
I tried it. I checked it out.
Sit in the dark with no one to talk to for 1 month, and you get back how many years of your life by doing that? Kaya Kalp, it's called.
Kaya Kalpa. The yogi I read about lived for 185 years in Kaya Kalpa 3 times. But no, there's another aspect of it, because she traveled around India like I did. And I found Nangudiri for skin diseases from the oil from the bathing of the deity. And the other place was Jatayu Kun at the Vaicheshwara Shiva temple, where Jatayu, Ram's friend, was cremated. And the other place was, that I've only heard about, and I visited, but I don't know the efficacy, was Karthika's temple in Colony, where there's a somewhere that you came across in your travels, any place that could help the devotees with their sicknesses, because we're here to serve.
You're here to serve, place to help with the sicknesses. Well, there are all kinds of doctors all over India. Many of them are very reputed. Hari Shori Prabhu, I said yesterday about his palsy. What's that called? Parkinson's disease. And I said to him that Narayan Prabhu had been cured by doctor, and I was thinking of the name. He told me the name, Paneri. Yeah. So there are good doctors. For health, as you say, there are various places you can go for various health diseases, for overcoming. Many of our devotees, now they go for this, what's that called, that Ayurvedic treatment? Panchakarma, yeah. So you can do that.
No, I was just wondering if you knew any
place which just cures everyone of everything. Yeah.
Those are established places. You know, the legends are there.
So if there is a place where you walk, we jumped in a pond, and like this Chavan Muni, he jumped in with the two Ashwini Kumaras, and he was old and wrinkled, and he came out as a fresh youth. If there's any place like that, it would be the biggest city in India. I'm not aware of it.
The other question I have.
The fountain of youth, yeah.
I preach through storytelling, and this story kind of explains the Maya, but you're a very good researcher. You did that nice book on...
Thanks for all the compliments.
But the story is about Narada being invited to lunch by Krishna, and Krishna says, lunch isn't quite ready, why don't you bathe in the river? And then come back. And he goes and bathes in the river, and as he's seeing his reflection in the river, he's turning into a woman. And he completely buys into the fact that he's a woman, and he physically changes into a woman, a very beautiful woman, and now sees himself as Naradi. And of course, a handsome prince comes along the bank of the river, sees Naradi, the two of them fall in love. They get married, sire a dynasty of many sons and grandsons. And then one day the kingdom is invaded, and all the sons and grandsons go out to fight, and they're all killed. And Naradi has to see for herself. She goes out to the field. She drops to her knees in pain, closes her eyes, and suddenly hears, Narada, the 5 minutes is up, lunch is ready, and finds himself standing next to Krishna. That was the best story that I ever found to explain the Lord's mystic yoga Mahamaya. I was just wondering if you knew the reference to that story.
No, it's in the Purana somewhere. Ask Lochan. He knows all the Puranas inside out.
Oh, okay. There was one other thing.
In the Padma Purana? Yeah.
Purana?
Yeah. One thing, there are many stories in Shastra, but they're not all told by our acharyas. That one and... the story of Tulsi and then being raped, but it's not told by our acharyas. They may be in Shastra, but not everything is meant for everyone. There are stories in Shastra establishing Shiva as supreme and Vishnu being bewildered by Shiva Maya, but not everything's meant for everyone. So, unless I know of a Vaishnava acharya telling that story about our acharya, Narad Muni, I wouldn't want to repeat that. People may misunderstand. We have, of course, Brahma being bewildered. It's there in Bhagavatam with explanation. Markandeya Rishi, similar. He saw Maya. That's very well known, that story, all over India. It's very common to see the picture of baby Krishna on the banyan leaf in the water of devastation, sucking his toe. When I say well-known, it means up until a generation or two ago. Now, some time ago, one devotee told me he was staying in one village area for some time, in Gujarat, And he went to one village and preached, and he was talking about Prahlad and Narasimha. This is all Hindus. They'd never heard of it. If you grow up watching TV, then you may not know anything. So if you can also do research, and you're doing that, right? You're doing films.
Yeah. Film. Mm. Like what you did in your book, I'm doing mm. my film.
Yeah.
Probably one of the films showing the Indians doing the nine processes of mm-hmm. violence, so, and the whole culture.
For any references, Puranic references, you can ask Lochan.
Oh, he, okay.
As far as Gita Press is accurate, he's accurate. Because he has all the Gita Press books. And Gita Press makes a point to be accurate in their Shastric presentation. What interpretation they give, that may be something different. But
the other thing was, because you started about philosophy, we were on a walk with Prabhupada in Paris, and he turned to the devotees and he said, I want you all to become Krishna conscious philosophers and defeat these rascal scientists and philosophers. And a couple of weeks later, we're back in London, and I don't know how I had the nerve to ask Prabhupada, who was in this room. I said, Prabhupada, these scientists and philosophers are so deeply entrenched, how will you ever change them? And he looked at me and he said, whether they change, whether they do not change, still I will go on with my propaganda work.
Hmm.
And the earth shook. It was Lord Shekhar. Anyway, but you enjoy the comments. So.
Yeah, thank you very much. That's it? Finished? Someone else is going to say something?